You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is...
Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Martha Hunt Handler on the show with me today. She's got an amazing new book. It's called Winter of the Wolf. It's been out about a month now, and we're going to talk all about it today. Welcome to the show, Martha.
Thank you, Hank. I'm delighted to be here. This is just, it's exciting to hear people's backstories, and I always think that myself, that I'm always asking people, tell me about yourself, and it's amazing what you learn.
You know, my favorite part of doing this show is finding out, you know, where people come from and what was it that drew them to this crazy thing that we call writing and storytelling. And, you know, after doing almost 950 shows now, everybody's story is different and it never gets old. So, I love it, and I can't wait to hear your story.
Great.
Well, Martha, we begin each show with the same question, as you know, and that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
This is sort of a sad story, but when I was 7, my parents were out to dinner. I had a babysitter, and I remember sitting down to write this book that was called The Runaway Bunny. And I illustrated the whole thing, and I begged the babysitter to let me stay up late so I could show it to my parents, because I was like, this is what I'm going to be. I already know it. This is amazing. And they came in, and my dad said, well, the illustration is not very good, and the story isn't too great either. And if this is what you think you're going to be for, you know, you're never going to support yourself. And I really think that those words were enough to dissuade me from ever looking at that again. It was like, wow. I put it down, and I didn't go there. And I think it was my gift. And if there would be one thing I would tell people, just be really careful with your words. I know I just recently read Glennon Doyle's book Untamed, and she talks about when she was 10, some teacher said to her something about, you've already got a belly, you're going to have to watch that for the rest of your life. And that one sentence made her become a bulimic from the age of 10. So it's just, it can be the littlest thing, but when someone that we, you know, perceive as people that are supposed to be knowledgeable say something to us, it can be so affecting. So it took me a long time to go, you know, to dig back in and decide, no, this is really what I want to do, because I became a technical writer and it just wasn't fulfilling in the least.
And what age were you when this interaction happened?
Seven years old. And I completely forgot about it until recently. I actually found the book in cleaning out during this COVID time. I found that book and I just sat there and cried, because I just think, oh, you know, I wish I wasn't writing my first book at 61. I probably would have been writing it at 18. I don't know.
Well, you know, we talk a lot on the show about early influences and early encouragement that we get, because as you know, the days of a writer can be kind of dark and lonely, and you know, there's a lot of time spent working on a manuscript that then everyone gets to join in on and appreciate and love and all of this stuff, but the creation of the thing can be tiresome and lonely and you know, discouraging and all that. And you know, I love that people have this early encouragement from someone that they get to hold on to during those dark times. But equally as powerful is that discouragement that comes from someone. And the it's interesting to see how, you know, that negative feedback feeds you in a certain way. Did you ever have that kind of rebellious attitude about that? Well, I'll show him or anything like that.
No, you know, I wish I did. I had it in a lot of other ways. But not about the writing, you know, and I'm sad he's passed on. I came and stick in his face and say, here. yeah, but it's, I just got finished listening to your Jennifer Robson podcast. And that was hugely helpful for me because you guys were talking about Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird. Because, right. you know, given that it took, I would, you know, 18 years to write this novel, but I would say a lifetime to get to this point.
Sure.
You know, to you know, I had like a book tour planned. I couldn't wait to see my book in a bookstore. I had like a huge New York City, you know, book signing party planned. And now none of that's going to happen. And so it was really good to hear you guys talking about that, that it really isn't about any of that. It's, you know, it was, it's my journey and it was a really heavy journey, but it's so wonderful that I have that now and I'll always have it. And it doesn't, as much as I want everyone to buy my book, cause I think it has really important messages. It's really my journey in the end.
Well, and you can't discount the journey because, you know, everyone can say, well, you know, if this would have worked this way, or if this would have worked this way, you know, how would I be different? Well, nobody knows that. And that's, you know, that'll kind of drive you crazy, you know, playing that what if game. The fact that we do know is that we have a book now and it's influenced by Martha's journey. And this is what we got. And, you know, fantastic.
And I do think it's like it all unfolds perfectly. Sometimes it doesn't seem like it in the moment, but
sure.
I think when you reflect back on your life and you think of, you know, big things and incidents that happened, they spurred you to growth in some way or another.
That's right. That's right. Well, you said that you worked as a technical writer. How did you kind of fall into that path?
So from a very early age, I could weirdly hear nature speaking to me, like plants and animals and all different things. And I couldn't really, I didn't think it was odd. I thought everyone could do it. And then I shared it with somebody when I was pretty young and they kind of knocked me down. So I kept it to myself, but it was just something I always heard. And I grew up in rural Illinois, surrounded by woodlands that, and I could hear the animals were really scared because they felt like change was happening and they were right because it became a subdivision within a few years and pretty much every forest was knocked down. And so I started realizing that that's probably what I needed to be listening to because their voices were pretty strong. I also had a wolf that always came to me in my dreams, a black one that was showing me things, just weird little things. It's sort of like, but the dream would be going along and then in the corner there'd be this wolf kind of like, no, this is where you're supposed to be looking. This is what you need to pay attention to. And so I just had a sense of the environment and how our connections to the environment and how important they were. And so I went to school and designed my own major, environmental conservation. And at the time, I mean, this was like 1981. There weren't a lot of jobs in that field, but I ended up getting one in Washington, D.C. And so I was a technical writer doing all sorts of work, mostly with the EPA and Department of Energy, all different kind of contracts. And, you know, it was interesting, but there was just still a big hole in my heart that, nope, this isn't it.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting, though, that you got to at least work alongside something that you were passionate about, even if it wasn't doing that. But I always find it interesting that how we find ways to get near the things that we love.
Yes.
What was it about technical writing that did you ever feel challenged? Did you ever feel that you were stretching some of those creative muscles in that work, or was it just wholly unfulfilling?
Yes, wholly unfulfilling.
What did you realize the disconnect, and did you ever, you know, think I would rather be doing this, or I have a story in me that needs to be told, but I'm kind of stuck over here? Did you ever feel that tension?
Yes, I felt it, and I don't think I listened very carefully to it. Or I was kind of putting it out to the universe, like, give me an idea of what I should be writing about. If I'm going to completely go off on this fiction tangent, tell me, give me some kind of sign of what I should be doing. And that seemed like it took a while to happen.
Want to grow as a writer and take your writing to the next level? Give Pro Writing Aid a try. Pro Writing Aid is a grammar checker, style editor, and writing mentor in one package. Pro Writing Aid will never replace a human editor. Rather, it helps you self-edit to a deeper level so that when you send it off to an editor, they will be able to focus on the meat of your writing and not spend their time fixing basic writing issues. Pro Writing Aid is the only platform that offers world-class grammar and style checking, combined with more in-depth reports to help you strengthen your writing. Our unique combination of suggestions, articles, videos, and quizzes makes writing fun and interactive. Writing can be grammatically perfect, but still feel awkward and clumsy. Pro Writing Aid searches out elements like repetitiveness, vague wording, sentence length variation, over-dependence on adverbs, passive voice, overcomplicated sentence structures, and so much more. Nothing makes a writer lose credibility faster than spelling and grammar mistakes. Submit clean, error-free writing. Go to ProWritingAid.com and use code HANK20 for 20% off of Pro Writing Aid Premium. Pro Writing Aid. Check it out today.
Gotcha. And along the way, you started a family and had some kids. So how does that affect? I have five kids, and I know that, along the way, I had to reach a certain point in my life before I could start feeding the creative monster inside me, if you want to kind of look at it that way. That, family takes precedent, and there are things that, I didn't have time or the mental energy, to feed into that. At what point did you start feeling the tug of this thing again?
I have four children, and I had 4 and 5 years, so really close together. And when we moved from Los Angeles to New York, I had decided, okay, I'm kind of done with consulting. I don't know where I'm going next, but I know that that's not it. And I'm just going to hang with my kids and see what happens. And in quick succession, the house that we were renting, I started hearing wolves, and I knew that wolves have not been in New York for over 100 years, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I went into the woods behind my house one day and found a couple of wolves in an enclosure next to a trailer. And I knocked on the door, and it was this young French pianist. And she told me that she was going to open up this wolf center and to educate people about wolves and help the two most critically endangered wolf species. And she asked me if I wanted to help her. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of perfect. Wolves have always helped me. It would be great to give back to them. So I kind of jumped on board with that. And then probably not more than a couple of years later was the inciting incident for the start of this novel, which was my best friend's 12-year-old son. She found him hanging. And we had grown up very spiritual. Both of our mothers were very open about spiritual world, and were always encouraging us to listen to ourselves, believe in what we were seeing, believe in what we were hearing, and that there's no such thing as death. It's just a passage, and we can get in touch with anyone that's passed on. There's no wall between us, and just to keep believing that, so you keep that open. And then when he passed away, it was like, this makes no sense. I mean, what had he done in 12 years? If you kind of believe that we're here for purposes and to learn things, like, what could he have done? And we were just, I know I was lost. I was lost as a friend. I didn't know what to say to her. I couldn't make any sense of it. And then I started hearing from her son, and he was basically telling me, this is your story. I'm laying it out for you. You've got a story here. And it first started out as just journal entries of me and my thoughts. Just, wow, like, a soul is not with us anymore. And where did he go? And what was he here for? And then it just came like tumbling out. I started to realize, okay, this isn't just journal entries. This is actually a book that's taking form here. And so I just listened and listened and listened. And, you know, 18 small years later. Now, it was kind of like you said, like, if you don't take the time, and I think I wasn't serious with it for a while. So I was just jotting it in between driving someone to soccer practice or to the dentist. And then finally, my husband said, you know, if you're going to do this, you should probably get an office. And, you know, just like the idea of spending money on myself for something that wasn't, I had no, you know, reason to believe that I could be a writer, but that helped me say, okay, I'm going to put the money down. Let's get an office. And then, you know, just showing up on a regular basis from, you know, these 4 hours that I had each day and making it a commitment and saying, you know, actually saying to friends, no, I can't do this because I'm going to my office to write. That was huge. Yeah, really huge. And I think it really started, it all started to fall into place after that when I took myself seriously.
So, well, first off, before we dig into some, what is the connection with wolves for you? What do you feel like is the connection with these wild creatures?
I guess I would say, you know, they're my totem animal. So it's something that's deep within me. I'm not sure that I completely understand it, but so I had this interesting situation not too long ago. I was in Austria at a health clinic because I was having just horrible stomach issues that didn't seem like any doctor was able to figure out what was really going on with me. And as part of this clinic, they have you go see a shaman, and the shaman put me into a trance. And then he woke me up and he said, do you have something to do with wolves? And I said, yes. And he said, I mean, you actually are around wolves all the time? I said, yes. He goes, okay, because there are like 100 in my office right now. I've never seen this before, but I'm going to put you back under and see what they're here for. And then when he brought me out, he said, so the wolves are telling you that your stomach issues are because you're not staying in your wolf lane. You're getting very distracted by everything else that's going on environmentally. And it's taking you away from what you're supposed to be doing here. And that is working for wolves. So I don't fully understand why, but I do have a deep sense, because as soon as I heard that and just got refocused, you know, and just became once more rededicated to helping wolves, my stomach issues just completely disappeared. And I can feel it again. Like, if I'll read an environmental story and then I start reading other stories about, you know, now it's the Alaskan refuge and getting drilling for oil. And all of a sudden I'm like, I feel my stomach clench up again. I'm like, okay, someone else has got to take that on because I can't do it all. And I know what I'm here for. It's the wolf.
So you told us a minute ago about this friend of yours and her son that had committed suicide, and that plays a role in this story. Could you touch on that for just a moment?
Sure. So, you know, it was one of these interesting things, the same thing that happens in my book. So this boy dies, and my protagonist is a younger sister who was very close to this brother. So she's 15 and he was 17. And she believes from the get-go that it wasn't a suicide, which is what my friend went through, because she also said, I know how it looks. I know what the coroner said. I was home. There was no forced entry. I know he was, I just still don't believe that it was a suicide. And, you know, even I was sort of like, I don't want to say you're crazy, but what else could it be? And so, you know, being around her, being so, so sure of that it wasn't, and hearing people's remarks, I mean, people are pretty nasty when it comes to suicides and laying blame. And people were saying to her, like, if he was so sick, why didn't you get him help? And just like horrible things. And so on top of it all, she was having to deal with that, you know, but she just would not go there. She would not say, like, well, maybe I missed something. Maybe there was something there that I just wasn't listening to. What, you know, is that possible? And so my book is sort of this young girl's determination and will. And I think it's that deep knowing we have. And I, you know, my mother was so good at, like, she would say to me, I'd be like, oh, I don't know if I should go to this party. I think there's going to be a couple of bad kids, but I'm just dying to go get out of the house. And she'd say, well, what does your gut say? And she would say it to me all the time. And it's so true, right? Like we have such an inner knowing of bad situations and bad energy. And there's so many times that we don't listen to it. And I think it's so important. So I always say my protagonist being is like my idealized self. If I had actually really and genuinely listened to my inner knowing and followed it, I'd probably be in a very different space. But as we talked earlier, this is my journey. It took me a while to come around to this, but I think that's such an important thing also for parents, just to, check in with your kids every once in a while and, what's going on with them? What are they thinking? And to put it back on them, so how do you think? And I would even say, big things like, is there a God? You'd be like, what do you think? And it gives you that like, yeah, these are not answers that are like, for most of us, yes and no. They're like, what do you think? What's going on inside you? You have a lot of deep knowledge, not from this lifetime, but from so many other lifetimes. Like, what is it telling you? So that was, I think a big part of my book is just following this girl's journey, believing in her so strongly that he didn't commit suicide and there has to be another answer, and not giving up on that idea despite, peer pressure and family pressures and everything else. And that's why I think you kind of fall in love with Bean, because she's strong in herself.
Noveler is the best way to write a novel. Why? Quite simply because we've made it the easiest place to do it. Writing a novel is hard enough. Noveler takes care of all the logistical bits of writing a novel, just leaving that small matter of the words to you. It's a clean, beautiful writing interface with writing analytics, goals and streaks, advanced grammar checking, version control, day, evening, and night modes, and many other features designed to take all the stress out of writing. Tell us what you need and we'll build it. Together, we'll build a better tool. With a design-led approach, all the right tools that you need, Noveler saves all your words constantly, allows you to manage and order your novel easily. It's accessible from any device, desktop or mobile. It syncs to Google Drive and Dropbox. It allows exports in various formats, including ebook and more. It also has nice touches like allowing you to write both offline and online, unique for a web-based platform. Everyone needs help with their writing, from inspiration through to grammar checking, so we're doing our best to provide that support. We integrate that support directly into Noveler. Our advanced grammar checker powered by Pro Writing Aid does everything from spell check to style advice. Our writing courses include the incredible Tim Clare's Couch to ADK. We're really excited to offer all Author Stories listeners 30% off Noveler for a whole year. And it doesn't matter if you choose to sign up for the monthly or annual plan, you'll get 30% off. All you need to do is use the discount code Hank when you sign up. Noveler, Novlr. That's noveler.org. So the book began in your journal, and you said that this book has an 18-year journey. At what point did this transform, or begin? Did you begin to see a different path from journal entries to, okay, there's another story here. This needs to be explored in a different way.
I think, like a lot of first-time authors, I think I put like everything into here. There were stories that so didn't belong in here, but they were funny things, and I would, just throw them in here. And so I think when I finally had the whole thing finished, it was like 300,000 words, and it needed to be closer to 25,000 words. But it was like all my kids. I couldn't tell one to go away. And so I finally got, at some point, because I was just getting nowhere, it was getting bigger instead of smaller every time I tried to edit it. I hired a book coach. This was a couple of years ago. And I didn't even know someone like that existed. I was just having coffee with a new friend and I was telling her, I didn't normally tell my own friends this kind of stuff, but because she didn't know me at all, I could say to her, yeah, I'm just struggling with this really big book that needs to be much less words and I don't know where to cut it. And she's like, have you thought about hiring a book coach? And I was like, a what? And that was like really enlightening. And it was actually her friend who I've still never met. But anyway, she took my book. She made me like first just, why am I writing the book? Which was obviously something you should do before you start any novel. But I had never thought about that. Like what in like three sentences, why are you writing this book? And then she made me outline the whole novel and say like, what's the triggering action? How are your characters going to react to that? And what's going to drive you to the next chapter? And that was also mind-boggling because all of a sudden I had to have a real, something needed to be happening in each chapter. And a lot of chapters didn't really go anywhere. There wasn't an inciting incident. So that made me pare it down a lot. And then she was just sort of like, okay, now you have to go sentence by sentence. And if it doesn't, you know, make a character stronger, make a scene stronger, or describe an event better, then the sentence needs to go. And that was it. You know, all of a sudden it was pared down like so well. And with such little input from her, it was like, just here's the way you need to do it. And I guess, you know, if I'd gone and get an MFA or taken any writing courses at all, I would have learned that kind of stuff, but I didn't. And maybe, it, you know, it was good. And she would say to me, you know, this doesn't belong here, but this could be a jump off for the next novel, you know? So that was also good. Like it's not permanently deleted. It's somewhere out there. So maybe I'll pick up other, you know, strange bits that are sitting there on my floor. But yeah, that was really helpful because then I could start to see the whole thing. I saw the whole arc when I did that outline. It all started to just come together in this magical way. Yeah, so that was my process. I guess everyone's got a different one, but that worked for me for sure.
When you started getting the details and the kind of inside information about your friend's family situation, did you communicate with her? You know, I think this is going to be a storyline in the book. Like, how do you broach that subject?
Yeah, that was, she's, you know, always been a very good friend. So she was very open to the whole thing. And it's only like the cause of death is the same and nothing else at all. Doesn't match her family in any way. So it's really the cause of death is the only thing. And then I just asked her a lot of, you know, what did it look like when she found it, the body and all that kind of things. So to get those kind of facts more correct, but then I didn't show her again until I had it published. And she was like, you know, it's still been an open wound for me. And this is really helping me just let this go in a way that I didn't realize how much I was still holding on to. And I think she recently had the anniversary of his death, which has always been just a horrible, horrible time for her. And she usually gets very depressed and doesn't leave the house for a while. And she said it was the first year that she was able to celebrate what his life had meant to her. Which is a big theme in my book, just kind of going from grief to growth or grief to gratitude that, you know, every moment that you had with that soul was special. And, you know, what did you get out from it? Because that's what we've got left, right? We're not losing anything. We've just got what we already have.
Right.
And just remembering that so that you keep them alive.
You mentioned earlier your protagonist in the book, Bean. Tell us about Bean and where did she come from?
I don't know where the name comes from. And everyone asked me that, but I think it really is an idealized version of myself. If I'd, you know, been a stronger person, if I'd listened more, if I'd followed my dreams a little bit more, And so she's just this very, she's learning a lot from her brother. Her brother was very into Inuit wisdom. And so she uses that when, as she's trying to solve his death, that maybe something might be Inuit related. So she goes back and kind of remembers everything that he told her about Inuits. She reads his Inuit books. And that was, you know, it happened in the book and it happened in my real life where I saw Nanook of the North when I was 8. It's a very old silent movie. I think it made in 1922, black and white. And I was obsessed with it. I have no idea why. And so my character is also obsessed with it. And she does, you know, her brother didn't really have any explanation for it either. She always just assumed that he might have lived as an Inuit in another life and was very familiar with it. And then I was going to have the book take place where I grew up in Illinois, but I needed a wolf. And wolves don't exist in Illinois, so I moved it to Minnesota. So that was kind of fun. I've still never been to Minnesota or been to the area that I'm describing, but there was something about Minnesota that really struck me. And I am definitely going to plan a trip there when this COVID thing is over and we can travel again. But that was really an important factor because I had it sort of like where I grew up in Illinois. We were very oriented around a lake in our town and sort of, yeah, just every season you're fishing, you're water skiing, you're playing ice hockey on it. That lake was sort of everything to us. And so the setting for my book, the lake is very important in a lot of ways. And house, like just being a nature girl, always wanting to be outside, paying attention to the animals that are around here and who might be signs showing her something. Yeah.
When someone gets the book Winter of the Wolf and they go through it and they experience the journey with Bean, when they get to the end and they close that back cover, what do you hope they're left with?
I hope that they're left with that souls don't die. They just move, you know, like it's energy, so it can't ever completely disappear. It can only go to another form. And if you read, I put a bunch of books that helped me and have, you know, allowed me to grow on in this belief in the back. So I hope people have a different feeling about death afterwards. And I think, you know, I've had a lot of friends call me up and say, wow, you know, I just started thinking about my mom and thinking about that we, you know, loved to collect butterflies, and I was just pretending that I was speaking to her, and all of a sudden butterflies have become huge in my life. And I'm like, yes, like that's what I really want. I want you to believe that souls aren't gone from us. They're only gone from our sight, perhaps, but they're around us. And the more you communicate and the more you're thankful for that communication and anything that was special to you. So I was kind of laughing because when we started this talk, we were having, I shouldn't say we, Hank was having some issues with his audio. And that's like a big one for souls, is to screw around with your electronics. So perhaps someone's trying to speak to one of us. And I just read that in a book recently, that electronics were huge. So I was like, well, this is a better way to think about it when your computer isn't working or your phone's having issues. Just like, okay, someone's trying to reach out to me.
So funny. The new book is called Winter of the Wolf. It's available everywhere now in hardcover and Kindle edition and audiobook. Is it?
Yes.
That's wonderful. We're going to put links to it in the show notes of this episode. Martha, if people are just discovering you and want to dig into all the great stuff that you do, where can they find you online? And I know you have a great website with a blog and stuff.
Yes.
Where can they find you?
That's MarthaHuntHandler.com.
Excellent. We'll put links to it in the show notes to make it easy for folks to find you as well. The new book, Winter of the Wolf, is available everywhere now. Grab your copy. Martha, thank you so much for taking time to come on the show.
Thank you, Hank. That was a lot of fun.
So
Scribophile is a respectful online writing workshop and writer's community. Writers of all skill levels join to improve each other's work with thoughtful critiques and by sharing their writing experiences. We're the writing group to join if you want to find beta readers, get the best feedback around, learn how to get published, and be a part of the friendliest and most successful writing workshop online. Improve your writing by receiving detailed critiques. Learn from a vast collection of free writing resources. Make lifelong friends in our busy community of writers. Writing is a solitary art, but that doesn't mean you have to be lonely. Lucky for you, there are thousands of writers on Scribophile every day, and we're a really friendly bunch. You've never seen a writing group like this one. Join Scribophile today at scribophile.community.